What's up, everybody? This is J.R. Hamatashian, author of several books. One of them, You Shall Never Know Security, my most popular one. You Know It's True, my most recent one. Two in the middle that I like, but not that many people buy. But you should check them out. They're pretty good. Who am I joined with?
It's me, Derek Sotak. I wrote a couple books on nachos and the William Hodgson role-playing game, Gray Caesar, Dream of My Death. And even though the Kickstarter for the expansion, Gray Caesar, Dream of My Death, also is lost, is done. And did it fund.
Humble brag right there.
Feel free to check it out and maybe get some copies that are for sale now.
So,
pre-order. That's the words.
If anyone invests money on it, they could still get a copy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Initial funding period is over, but now it's, hey, it's funded, but if you still want more until I actually physically order them all, that's fine. All right.
So when does it close?
What day is this going up? It closes on the 11th, so last Saturday, if I remember episode numbering correctly.
All right, so you're all fucked then.
Yeah, this is the future. I mean, you can still get a copy. Please, still get a copy. You just can't be part of the Kickstarter funding.
So I have a throat infection, so I apologize to everybody out there. Pretty sick, and then when Derek told me we were going to be reviewing Predators, I threw up.
Yeah, because this is the movie you picked to watch.
I was
joking. That's how that works.
I was at a Walgreens recently, actually, and the guy in front of me, he was like, I only want the left Twix. Where the left Twix at? You know, left Twix only. And I was like, oh, that's pretty clever. And I was like, oh, you're just crazy. I thought I was going to make a friend, but he kept going on and on. I was like, oh, you're not just making a funny little joke. You're just
He watched those commercials and like it really took him to heart, didn't realize they were parodies.
So, what are we talking about today? We're talking about Predators. Came out all the way back in 2010. It was the third entry in the Predator series, absent the Alien vs. Predator spinoffs. And I suppose this was the first attempt at a reboot, and now they then did the Predator in 2018, which was another attempt at a reboot. And then the recent Prey, which we'll be covering next, is a quasi-prequel reboot. They saw this movie as a direct sequel to Predator and wanted to avoid the spin-offs in Predator 2. I have no real explanation why, but I've always wanted to see this movie since it came out in 2010. So this has been 12 years coming.
Uh-huh. And it wasn't worth the wait.
It wasn't worth the wait, but I also think this movie gets hated on more than it really deserves.
I'll agree with that.
People would be like, oh, this movie sucks. I had friends who watched it like, oh, it's terrible. It's like, no, it's not terrible. I think the first half is pretty good. Mm-hmm. I would say the main criticism of it is it's more of an action movie than a action horror film like the original Predator. I think I'm also was always fascinated in this movie because I think I have quite the interest in Adrian Brody. First, because he's not the first go-to you think of for an action franchise.
Certainly not.
And second, he's had quite the weird career. He's someone who was into the arts his whole life. He actually started out as a magician at children's shows when he was a child. He went to LaGuardia High School of Music and Art and Performing Arts in Queens, which is a well-known performing arts high school. I remember seeing him in Summer of Sam. You ever see that movie?
Yeah.
And being like, who's that guy? Which I also said when I first saw Michael Shannon in Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
Aww.
So I have a pretty good, hey, who's that guy score, uh-huh. You know? It's two for two. Then he starred in The Pianist in 2002. Which itself was a bit of a risk, since it's a Roman Polanski film. But it was also a semi-autobiographical film about a Nazi taker of Poland, as witnessed by a pianist, so I guess they had to give it a pass as a Roman Polanski film. His performance in that movie was quite good. He was so dedicated, he learned to play the piano, he lost 30 pounds off his already skinny frame, he sold his car and his home, and he broke up with his girlfriend to prepare himself for the isolation. Which I always wondered about, because, like, imagine that was a pretty good relationship, and then he broke up with her because of the movie. Like,
he's like the kid in Whiplash.
Like, the real kid or the actor?
No, the character of the kid in Whiplash, who just gets rid of his entire life to take over the drums.
When he became the youngest, I mean, that's pretty... I mean, it's one thing to be like, I'm breaking up with you because I'm starring in a Roman Polanski film. It's another thing to be like, I'm breaking up with you so I can play the drums better.
Yeah, the jazz drums, too. Not even, like, a real band.
I kind of wonder what his girlfriend thinks when, like, she saw him become the youngest person to win the Best Actor Award at 29. She, like, I'm so proud, or fuck that guy. He wrote that movie. Then after he won the Academy Award, he kind of began to fuck things up a bit. Like, he kissed Halle Berry at the awards ceremony awkwardly without permission. He did a pretty hilarious fake Jamaican patois while wearing fake dreads on SNL to introduce Sean Paul, which got him banned for life from SNL. Mm-hmm. Although they must have seen him bringing out the fake dreads before they went live. And also, I actually just watched... So, I think SNL did a good job of scrubbing the video off YouTube because I couldn't find it.
But they're pretty good.
If you want to watch it, you could find it on those knockoffs, Daily Motion. But I think in his defense, I've watched a couple of interviews with him, and he grew up liking hip hop, and he grew up in New York City, so he was legitimately, and he actually does a pretty good Jamaican. I must say, it's a pretty good Jamaican accent, but he just goes on and on. It's like, I think the dreads kind of put it over the line. I think he was just trying to be funny.
Black voice. Blackface, that's too much, but black voice.
He didn't do a black voice.
No.
He just did Jamaican verbiage, I guess. Uh-huh.
Well, Jamaican me want to move on from this topic.
So, he still had a pretty good career going, being in King Kong, Midnight in Paris, and just 2 years after Midnight in Paris, he was playing a character called Flirty Harry in a movie called Inappropriate Comedy with app capitalized, because I guess an app plays a role in it. Maybe that was a time when apps were the new big thing. And his whole shtick in that movie was making gay double entendres the whole time. IMDb is unfortunately silent on what he did to prepare for that role. But we have this dichotomy of this guy's in Midnight in Paris, and then he's in this movie Inappropriate Comedy, which in my head I kept confusing with Movie 43, which is basically...
Yeah, because you were like, oh, he's that guy from Movie 43, remember that? And I'm like, I don't remember that part in it.
I mean, that's more of a damning admission that you actually saw Movie 43.
Oh boy, did I.
I mean, who could resist Hugh Jackman as a guy with testicles on his face?
And nobody.
I don't understand. I mean, I'm still pretty fascinated at how they got so many fucking big names in that movie. They're still
getting off of that Dumb and Dumber money, I think.
Oh, was that? That wasn't them, was it?
The Farley Brothers? Or one of the Farley Brothers, maybe.
So the interesting thing about Adrian Brody, when he's playing this terrible Flirty Harry character and all the other dreadful movies he's been in, he's completely straight-faced and serious. He's not like Nicolas Cage, who's a balls-to-the-walls meme machine. Mm-hmm. The same year that he starred in this movie Predators, he played an over-the-top psychotic drug-dealing principal in a terrible high school comedy. Derek, what's the worst name you can think of for a high school comedy involving drugs?
High school, but high as in drugs. Maybe it's all capitalized with a hyphen in between.
You literally got the name right.
Here we go.
I mean, it's just called high school. They didn't go that extra step of accentuating the word high, but it's called high school. So it's I don't understand why he would need to accept. Maybe he just loves working. I don't exactly understand. And he does bring it on every film.
Yeah, he doesn't phone it in, which is definitely a plus, because there's certainly a lot of Nicolas Cage movies where he's phoning it in.
Yeah, if you watch his Flirty Harry performance in that terrible movie, I guess he doesn't find the comedy embarrassing, but he's legitimately trying to do a good job. So I find him interesting. I mean, this movie also has Adrian Brody and Topher Grace in the leads. So for a Predator film, we're talking inspired casting. This movie was directed by Nimrod Antel. And it's interesting he got a fairly big ticket item like this to reboot this big franchise, as before he'd only made a few movies, including that movie Vacancy that had Luke Wilson, which I remember seeing trailers for. Mm-hmm. You ever see that movie?
I think I did, but I cannot remember a thing about it.
Checking into a scary hotel, yeah, the movie. Yeah, yeah. So the origins of this movie lay with Robert Rodriguez, who wrote a script while he was making Desperado. I mean, speaking of Desperado, I do like saying, not yet, quite a bit. Uh-huh. You ever see Desperado?
I have seen all those movies, but probably not since the early 90s.
You don't remember that from the trailer?
I don't remember that from the trailer.
Not yet. Anyway, the studio rejected his pitch, but then 15 years later, they called him up and they were like, hey, we found this script. Want to do this project? The fact that his script was written in the mid-90s explains all the musical cues for Cotton Eye Joe and Boys to Men. You remember that news story when the Catholic Church was disappointed to learn that Boys to Men was an R&B group and not a delivery service? The originally rejected script by Robert Rodriguez had predators riding motorbikes and drinking alien beer while watching matches in a Colosseum-like arena. There was also a substantial role for Dutch, famously played by Arnold Schwarzenegger from the first film, who had been captured and forced to fight in the arena as a gladiator against predators and other alien creatures. But due to prohibitive costs and the fact that, you know, he was now the governor of California, probably couldn't take time out of his, like, doing real shit time to fucking star in another Predator movie, it was rewritten to feature captured soldiers dropped into an alien game preserve. And originally, they had an idea for having 200 Predators in the movie, but then they're like...
Jesus.
Then, like, they naturally thought, one, that's fucking expensive as shit, and two... How the fuck would they ever survive 200 predators? It's impossible.
Yeah, for a an alien race that's supposedly all about the warrior honor code, 200 against 8 seems kind of unfair.
Rodriguez offered Schwarzenegger a cameo at the end where Dutch, in full predator attire, emerges from the ship with several predators and praises the survivors for winning, but Schwarzenegger couldn't commit. And I also think that people would have been like, you know, people get very protective of franchises. They'd be like, oh, Dutch will never sign up with the Predators. You know, oh, besmirch as the original.
He wouldn't, because they know him for that, I don't know, hour that he talks and has dialogue in that film.
But it'd be like, oh, it destroys the point of the first one where the human spirit survives and I was a traitor.
Well, that didn't stop him from making Rambo movies.
Who the fuck knows, right? But it does kind of, I don't know, I could see it leaving a little bit of a bad taste in the mouth. The movie got a C+ cinema score from filmgoers, which is pretty low. It was criticized by Roger Ebert for not including the silent suspense of the original, Roger Ebert giving it 2 stars, and asking, not without reason, is it a wise use of resources to transport several mammals untold light years through space just so you can watch them getting their asses predatored? Good point. It has a 65% on Rotten Tomatoes based on 203 reviews, which is still considered fresh, a 52% user score based on 100+ user ratings, and a 6.4 on IMDb based off about 230,000 users. So it seems to be a mix, if slightly on the positive side. Did you see this when it came out?
I did. I went and saw the movie theater.
How were your impressions then, and how do your impressions compare now?
I mean, about the same. I thought it was kind of, there's a lot of this stuff that's pretty good and overall not particularly great, and the same can be said this time.
Well, it's not too helpful. So let's just talk about, this is my first time seeing it. I think, so the premise of the film, as mentioned, is, you know, Adrian Brody and these other characters kind of wake up mid-flight from the stars. They're descending to this jungle planet. They crash land and then slowly begin to realize, well, I guess their parachute breaks their fall.
I was wondering if Fortnite ripped this off as, oh yeah, just jump a bunch of people into an arena via parachutes and then have wacky adventures in that. But then it appeared to be a video game in 2008 or 2009, Section 8, something like that, that used this theory first. And then wouldn't the Predators have better tech than a parachute that doesn't open up?
Yeah, I was kind of wondering, isn't it also a bit like cheating to just like airdrop confused people onto a planet and then study them off with like broken bones and injuries and out of their elements to hunt these people in the preserve where the predator knows the terrain and have attack dogs and all the advantages?
Yeah, and these other aliens get airdropped in via like big cages as opposed to just a parachute.
I feel so, yeah, so all, basically these human soldiers were supposed to be like, you know, tough soldiers on Earth.
Yeah, the toughest stereotypes you can think of.
They're not, but the thing, one thing that's kind of interesting is, there's about 8 people who get airdropped, but none of them are like, are they supposed to be the elite of the elite? Like, some of them guys like, I'm a Mexican gangbanger. But like, is he the best Mexican? Like, what exactly?
Yeah.
About,
it is unusual. Like, in some ways, you would think in one case, the Predators seem to be better at solving crimes than the normal police. And yeah. In other ways, it's just like, here's some soldier from Sierra Leone, let's take him.
Yeah, so we got Adrian Brody as a mercenary, who's a tough as nails, but sensitive enough mercenary who can quote Hemingway when need be. We get Topher Grace, who plays Topher Grace as a doctor, you know, doing his sarcastic, stuttering, smart-alecky thing. I mean, I do like, I've seen enough That 70s Show that I'm a bit endeared to Topher Grace. The big twist in the movie is that Topher Grace is actually, like, a serial killer, I guess. Which is interesting, because it's like, he was never caught on Earth, so they're, like, predators who are, like, sleuths who are, like, solving murders on Earth to figure out this is really the bad guy who's been doing it so they can transport him to this planet.
Yeah, like, I really want to know, this comes more into effect later on, where I have a better joke about this, but the infrastructure behind the Predator Corporation that, like, sets up this game preserve type of thing, like, whatever subcontractors they have to send out to Earth, like, go pick these people up.
There's a female sniper from the IDF who has a sniper rifle, which seems to be quite impractical in jungle. There's kind of like a skinny white cracker death row inmate rapist who has no skills and is on death row and is armed with only a tiny knife.
Walter Goggins. I mean, the whole other group other than Adrian Brody are like, oh, this is kind of a murderer's row of people in the next 10 years who will become semi-famous.
Yeah, I mean, this movie does have the strange designation of starring two Academy Award winners.
Mm-hmm.
You got Adrian Brody, and then you got Marshallah Ali before he became a big name.
Yeah.
Who stars as a Death Squad employee from Sierra Leone. I mean, when they airdrop this, like, skinny cracker rapist guy with no skills, there had to have been a Predator back there, like, punking the other Predators. Like, we got this fucking guy on death row. He's insane. He's a maniac. But then he's just, like, this skinny little dork who rapes college girls who's armed with a knife.
Yeah, like, this is the shitty subcontractor. Like, oh, we only had 5 days on Earth to find all these people. Who can we get? Oh, let's just stop by a prison and grab whoever. That's the first person we find there.
There's a Russian commando with, like, a Doom-style chain gun.
He's a Chechen guy, to begin with, and it is the actor who played Oleg Razgul from 15 Minutes, which is a pretty fun little movie from back in the day.
I think at the time of this movie, there was fighting in Chechnya. They were trying to become independent, and so the Russian soldiers were trying to stop them? I don't really know. It's hard to tell exactly when this is supposed to take place, but there's reference to soldiers being in Afghanistan, so I guess it's supposed to be contemporary for the time.
Well, I mean, soldiers have been in Afghanistan for 20 years now.
So I guess this could have taken place anytime up till last year.
Anytime after Predator 2.
A Japanese Yakuza guy who has a little pistol and a dapper suit and dress shoes, so you know this guy's fucked, you know?
You know he's also bad because he takes the shoes off to walk around barefoot.
Yeah, but you know he would die in about 5 minutes when he gets bitten by an alien centipede. And there's Danny Trejo as Danny Trejo, Mexican cartel hitman.
Yeah, as friend of Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, kind of a fun little story. I think in the script there was like, the character was described as a guy who looks like Danny Trejo. And then Danny Trejo heard about it and he called Robert Rodriguez and he's like, I'm a guy who looks like Danny Trejo. You got the job.
I mean, that's always the fun thing about, like, studio movies, when they're like, oh, we want a X actor type, and then the actual actor, they want it based off of applied, and they're like, no, we don't want you, we want someone that's like you, but not you.
It's kind of like that story about, like, Charlie Chaplin becoming, like, coming in fourth in the Charlie Chaplin competition. Adrian Brody's character, is a pretty interesting choice in the movie, in that he's smart, but he is, like, fairly unlikable and self-motivated, which makes sense, because he is a mercenary. Like, he isn't particularly sensitive. He isn't willing to risk his life to save anyone else, at least for most of the movie, until it becomes convenient at the end for him to completely change his personality. Again, there's also the feeling like, is this really the best of the best?
Mm-hmm.
No one's as visibly impressive as an Arnold Schwarzenegger or Jesse Ventura. And Arnold Schwarzenegger had the advantage in Predator of coming into the movie as his own known, likable, charismatic character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if anyone could really identify anything about Dutch, but he's Arnold Schwarzenegger. People liked him. And this, you kind of have these eight characters who, like, I don't really know if you could expect much character development in a Predator movie, especially when they're, like, airdropped on a planet. And I actually think they do a decent job enough of, like, giving a little bit of the characters a little bit of insight into them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a big criticism of the movie is that, oh, no one cares about these characters, they're paper thin. But also, what the fuck do you expect? Also, it's kind of a weird tack to have, like, the serial rapist be the comic relief character.
Yeah, that's probably not something they would do these days.
I mean, I guess it's something like they needed someone to be the levity, and you have all these characters who, like, ostensibly don't speak it. Like, they do speak English, but a lot of them aren't, like, the Russian guy, and the, like, it wouldn't make that much sense for them to be, like, fucking wisecrackers, you know what I mean? So the movie follows the expected path. These characters all slowly figure out what's going on. They come across a Marine who built some pretty impressive homemade traps and realize, oh, he's trying to defend himself from somebody.
Yeah, traps that are literally like, when you trip them, 100,000 spikes fall from the sky somehow over the area of 1 acre.
He is a Marine, so he's pretty good, right? Adrian's character is a bit of a writer's exposition machine. Like, when he highlights all the strange things, he's like, the sun's not moving in the sky. That signals something strange is happening. They obviously realize something is terribly afoot when they start getting chased by alien dogs. This is a little bit when the movie started. Like, I already knew the fucking plot, right? Mm-hmm. But I liked how it's developing. They're, like, trying to figure things out. No one's acting that illogically. They're talking about all the different possibilities. Maybe this is a hell. Maybe this is an experiment. What's going on? They're trying to piece things together. But then the introduction of these alien dogs, because the fucking design of the dogs is incredibly janky and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have these huge pillars of spikes sticking out of them at all angles, which you think...
I mean, they're handles that are easy to grab if you're being attacked, so you can't actually be bitten by them.
You think it would destroy their equilibrium and get snagged on every vine in the forest.
You'd think.
It seems strange that the predator, like, the premise and logic of the predators does make much more sense when they're venturing out to Earth, into our terrain, to try and challenge themselves to capture and attack, like, the best humans to fight. Where here, it's like, the predators have all the advantages. The Yakuza guy has a fucking suit, a handgun, and a sword. The rapist guy has a knife. And these predators have, like, fucking rocket launchers and can become invisible.
Yeah, laser beam. I mean, this kind of goes back to the, oh yeah, that this quote-unquote noble warrior race. But, I mean, they're just, like, the rich people who go to Africa with $1 million machine gun to gun down a defenseless giraffe or something like that. It's like, this is not particularly fair at all.
I wonder if this is kind of like the fall of Rome aspect of predator culture. They're like, we're so rich and decadent. It's like, let's import 8 people and drop them into our preserve.
Uh-huh. You know?
This also, it kind of loses the slasher nature of the original Predator movie. There was a little bit of an aspect of that that wasn't explored enough. Like, the first kill on this movie was Danny Trejo, where he kind of disappears and they find him hunched over and hear him calling for help. And they quickly realize it's a trap. I thought the movie would be a bit creepier and more subtle and not actually show us what happened to Danny Trejo, because the image of him just kind of slumped over and you only see his back and not what happened to him. Yeah. It's a little bit creepy, but then the movie has to be very obvious and you see him slumped over and he's been shot or something. And the predators were just using his recorded voice to try and trap him.
Mm-hmm.
They come across an encampment where the original predator, like the original looking predator, is tied up and captured, as to say, this ain't your daddy's predator. I guess he's at war with other predators who all seem much less interesting.
Yeah, I guess there's some kind of, if you really want to dive into the lore of it, which I took a brief excursion down the Wikipedia page, I guess there's all these, you know, different clans of predators that fight each other.
But, I mean, the big problem is that the original predator design is so captivating and interesting. And the new Predator designs, they're all, like, metaled up like Jason X.
Yeah.
So it's, like, they're not... It's just, like, a big metal-y-looking thing.
Yeah, instead of having a mandible with, like, one moving part, it has a mandible with 2 moving parts.
Yeah, so I think the other three... There are 3 other Predators who are, like, at war with the normal Predator. And I guess the other Predators are just, like, bigger. Like, they kind of explain, like, the big ones don't like the small ones.
Yeah, if you watch the next Predator movie, which I cannot recommend, certainly.
I'll never do.
Yeah, basically, Predators trying to, like, more advance their species. They just take a bunch of, you know, the best DNA around and, like, inject themselves with that and get more and more powerful, that kind of thing.
Don't they need to learn that eugenics doesn't work?
Well, I guess it's working pretty well for the Predators.
One part of the movie that made me chuckle is there's, like, you know, I guess Adrian Brody detects that they're being set up for a trap, and he allows Marshala Ali to get kind of, like, fucked up and captured, and they escape, and everyone starts yelling at him, being like, oh, you knew it was a trap, and you scurried away. And he's like, oh, well, we learned useful insights, like, they use projectile-based weapons. It's like, oh, wow, you realize they had guns? That's, you mean when they were shooting at you before you didn't figure it out? Anyway, there is one clever scene, I thought, where they discover another alien that the predators have landed on this hunting preserve, which looks like a big, goofy insect running around.
Yeah, almost like a pumpkin head.
That was actually the original Predator design for the 1987 movie, back when they had Jean-Claude Van Damme, who was supposed to be inside it, and he was supposed to be more like a martial artist Predator, which they wisely nixed that goofy-looking design and hired Stan Winston to make the final Predator design, which looks awesome. The IDF agent says she heard stories about how Arnie's character Dutch had survived his encounter in Guatemala and debriefed Army intelligence about it. So that kind of made me wonder, like, is his story well known in, like, Army intelligence circles?
I mean, you would think it would have to not be for any of this plot to work. But, like, you know, just apparently some random person entirely across the world knows about this, yeah.
What should the Army know about the Predator as an alien life, then?
Well, that's what we got Alien 2 for, and the Predator.
They eventually encounter Lawrence Fishburne in full Yoda Morpheus mode. And it's like, the way he was introduced, I was like, was he from a prior Predator movie? Or it's like, no, he's just some guy that he's introduced in such a way that we're supposed to be, like, impressed by his presence. He plays another mercenary who'd been on this planet, I guess, for several seasons. I don't know exactly what that refers to. He survived and is going crazy. And he explains that, oh, there's a Predator ship here. Although once the plan becomes, you know, figure out how to navigate an alien ship to get home, I think that means you're fucked, because...
Yeah, it's not as easy as Independence Day would have you believe.
I mean, unless the Predator ship just has a big button that says, like, fly, and all the coordinates are saved like it's a fucking Uber pickup, I don't think your plan's gonna work.
Yeah, I mean, the Predators do understand English.
Yeah, I mean, did they... I guess, is that a new device? I mean, I guess it would make sense for them to, like, have some kind of device that could decipher all languages.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, they've been coming to Earth for 300 years now. In at least America for 300 years.
As I mentioned, I liked the first half or so of the movie when they're just, like, figuring out what's going on, and it's, like, a bit creepier. But then the last half of the movie, things become so compressed and happen so quickly. So, it turns out Lawrence Fishburne, as a scavenger, he decides he's going to try and kill everybody and steal their shit by hotboxing the place that they're hiding out in. So that everyone makes a ruckus to attract the Predators, who then blow up Lawrence Fishburne, which, I mean, 7 seasons of hiding all for nothing. I didn't really get it, like, the Predators have heat-detecting technology, and Lawrence Fishburne was holed up in a giant, conspicuous metal closet. So I'm not sure why the Predators didn't immediately find where the fuck he was hiding out.
Yeah, it blocks the heat, all that metal in between.
I did like there's this one scene with a Japanese guy. He only has, like, 3 lines of dialogue, but he reveals he speaks English but doesn't say much because he speaks too much and shows that he has a few fingers cut off, you know, presumably by the Yakuza he works for. I kind of like that. It's like, we get a little sense of this character. Got a little bit of a sense of humor. He's dedicated to the Yakuza. He's been through some shit. A little bit of nice character work, I think.
Uh-huh. And you liked the fight at the end?
We'll get to that, but it wasn't bad. I mean, it was. We'll get to it. So basically, the three Predators start chasing everyone around this metal closet type space they find themselves in. The Russian comes back to save Topher Grace, mistakenly thinking Topher is Eric from that 70s show and not Eddie Brock. Topher Grace does not return the favor and lets him get caught, but the Russian loads himself up with grenades and blows up, killing your Predator. So that's one Predator down. Given how often the Predators have fallen for the trick of, like, I'm going to use my hands to kill this guy. Uh-oh, he has grenades on him. That would be, like, lesson one in Predator survival school. Mm-hmm. They escape. The skinny rapist guy sort of has a chance to redeem himself by stabbing at a Predator who shoots at him while doing that whole loud, "We did it, guys, we did it," when the audience know there's still, like, 30 minutes left in the runtime. He stabs a Predator up pretty good, but then gets his spine ripped out Sub-Zero style. And I guess the Japanese Yakuza guy and the Predator, this Predator, tacitly agree to a sword versus arm blade showdown. Except the Predator is still wearing his full body armor, so it's not really a fair fight.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is the closest where the Predators actually come to, oh, noble warriors.
Yeah, they both end up slashed up and dead. I thought the fight was fine. It wasn't that dynamic, and it wasn't that long.
Well, fun samurai fact for you. The typical samurai fight lasted about 3 seconds. Not this clanging swords around nonsense that you get in shows.
Well, I kind of see why it would last 3 seconds, because one samurai is better than the other.
Exactly.
And then decapitates them. Is that really a fight, or is it just like...
I mean, I guess it's a standoff duel, right? I mean, I guess you know most showdowns in the West were, it lasted as long till they drew guns, and then at that point it was over.
I'm surprised it only lasts 3 seconds, because, like, you'd think the first slash, the other samurai could at least, like, partially block or evade.
I mean, it depends on how good they are, right?
I mean, I guess, yeah, I mean, is there a draw? There's no draws, right?
Like, I mean, I'm sure it depended, but I mean, typically, as much as we like to imagine samurais as, oh, they were having sword fights all the time, like, oh, people just knew each other by, outside of your ronin, that is, like, a famous samurai just knew that they were inherently better or worse than whoever they're up against, and was like, well, let's not even bother with this, because we know one of us is going to die, and which one it's going to be.
So does that mean the only fights would be against people who didn't know their relative skill levels?
Yeah, so it'd be like masters, or in the case of Ronin, just like random guys who were not particularly famous.
So since the skill levels, you think, would be closer to each other in those situations, you think the fights would last longer than 3 seconds?
Yeah, you would think.
So in a span of about 10 minutes, two of the three predators have been killed. So that's one of my criticisms of the movie. Like, we have this premise of, like, ooh, three predators hunting in packs. But then it's like, yeah, and, like, the blink of an eye, we're down to one predator. So it basically becomes a one predator movie again. Adrian, Topher, and the IDF lady are running in the woods toward the tied-up predator to try and get him to help them escape on the spaceship when Topher gets maimed in a trap. Adrian Brody's like, ah, he's dead weight, and they need to leave him. He's like, hey, maybe we could, you know, use him as a decoy and load him up with explosives to kill the other predator who will come over to him for some trophies, which, I mean, I get, like, damn, dude, it's one thing to say leave him. It's another to, like, describe the way you can rig him up with explosive devices while he's still alive. I mean, a little decorum is called for. The IDF soldier's like, no, I'm not leaving him. And Adrian leaves to go speak to the tied-up predator. The subplot of making deals with the Predator where Adrian frees him and they, like, understand each other, the Predator will help him get home, I think is a bridge too far. Mm-hmm. I mean, first, if this Predator's classmates learned he was rescued by a human and made a deal with a human, he's never going to hear the end of it.
Uh-huh.
And what did the Predator just set up the spaceship ride back to Earth? Like, how do you know Adrian Brody's not going to end up fucking dying with penguins in the Arctic or something?
Mm-hmm.
The bigger predator comes back and fights the smaller predator. The smaller predator starts up the ship in motion, and the little predator gets decapitated. Also, another rule, I think, aside from human and predator deals being stupid, predator versus predator fight scenes are kind of boring and stupid and no one cares. The big predator, like, clicks a few buttons on his smartwatch and blows up the spaceship. Though it seems a bit odd that there would be a self-destruct button on a different predator spaceship.
I don't know. It's Wi-Fi enabled, something like that.
We assume Adrian Brody has died. So the real important lesson I hope we've learned from listening to this podcast is never to trust anybody or help anybody. Because it turns out Topher Grace is actually a serial killer. And he's poisoned that IDF woman with a neurotoxin derived from a plant on the planet. I guess his thinking is like, my leg is maimed by a bear trapped. We're fucked. There's only two of us left. I might as well get my serial killer jollies in at this moment and, like, torture this woman who tried to help me.
Yeah, admittedly, this is also a plant from Earth that he's familiar with because of its poison stuff that I guess a killer horticulturist was brought here at some point with the seeds, and they took root on this planet.
Actually, a little subplot, a little trivia thing that got cut out of the film is that when they originally encounter, like, this neurotoxin plant, that plant had actually gone extinct, like, millions of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to be some other fact that someone's supposed to know, like, something must be up here because something's wrong here because this plant went extinct millions of years ago. But, I mean, what are the odds that not only would you have...
a million years ago?
I think it's a dinosaur plant, dude. That's why it's got a scaly tail.
Yeah, so they had to bring a bunch of T-Rexes to this planet and hunt them down.
Oh, I mean, how many exposition facts can you load up in there? Like, what are the odds that, like, not only are you a psychopath who knows about plant neurotoxins, but it's like, I could also identify this long extinct plant.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and between Prey and this movie, the predators have evolved quite a bit. And even between, like, this predator and the super predators, and even the super duper predators that are in the predators, what exactly was the predator race like a million years ago?
Well, don't spoil Prey, my friends. I haven't seen it. But Adrian Brody returns. He quite inexplicably decided to stay, maybe because the IDF woman was good-looking. He rescues her, shoves a scalpel in Topher's neck so he's bleeding out, loads him up with explosives, and does the whole, like, loading up the body with explosive tricks that all the predators can't help resisting. So when the predator comes for his trophy, I mean, if you think about it from the predator's perspective, what could a Topher Grayskull be redeemed for at the Predator Carnival? Like, pop rocks and a whoopee cushion? Come on.
They don't mention that part. A skull is a skull is a skull to a predator.
And the predator flies through the air after getting blown up. But then there's a fight scene where Adrian does the whole rub himself up with mud shtick, as Arnold did back in 1987. So he'd previously been told in the movie that predators learn from their mistakes, but I guess they never learned from this 30-year-old mistake where they... No one figured out, like, hey, when you smear yourself with mud, we can't see you anymore. Adrian beats up the Predator real good, but gets caught. The IDF sniper lady has to snipe the Predator to free Adrian, who then cuts off the Predator's head with his own blade. I guess that neurotoxin apparently didn't do much to destabilize her, since she was able to fire off that sniper rifle fine. For her troubles, Adrian Brody finally reveals his character's name, Royce. Would have been more fun if his name was something like lame or embarrassing, like Clarence.
My name's Leslie.
Yeah, there you go. I'd be like, oh, I understand why you're a silent mercenary. So Adrian and the IDF lady see a bunch of other parachutes coming down, and they're like, well, let's figure out a way to get off this fucking planet. Although, since the Predators can just use their smartwatches to blow up their own ships, I don't see how the fuck that's going to happen. I mean, there should have been a post-credit scene of them, like, a week later, where they're both, like, dying of dehydration in the woods or going insane. Also, the end credits of the movie to, like, Good Golly, Miss Molly, which seemed quite tonally strange.
Well, that's because the original Predator ended with that, I believe, was their reasoning there.
Is it?
I think so.
That's also tonally strange.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and what the fuck?
I mean, that was somewhat of a time-relevant song for when the first one came out.
What was it, Great Balls of Fire Taken?
Yes, it was, by a stupid Maverick? No, what did they sing in there? Whatever, Top Gun.
So yeah, this I didn't hate this movie, and I think it serves as a perfectly fine action movie. It's just important events are just very compressed in the last half, and then it starts to feel like it's going through the motions. The aspect of three predators hunting people wasn't fulfilled very well because the predators get bumped off so quickly and it just ends up being one predator. The predator subplot, making a deal with humans and trying to escape off the planet, doesn't make much sense. Although I guess once these humans realize they're stuck on an alien game preserve, they'd be like, let's just kill ourselves. It'd be like a 5-second, it'd be like a 10-second movie. They'd be like, we're fucked, what are we gonna do?
Yeah, because even if they do get that ship, and I guess they're also experts at A, flying an alien ship, and B, enough star chart navigation to figure out whichever planet they're on and to make it back to Earth.
I mean, I guess the thinking is, like, we might as well try something.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but
I do like the casting choices. Like, I like Adrian Brody as the lead.
Yeah, no, I think
I like Topher Grace as, you know, the Topher Grace style character. I think it's interesting to, you know, you can't just replicate the exact same aura of the original film. And I did like they made it an ensemble. So I don't think it's that bad of a movie. It's just a bit underwhelming.
Yeah, man, this is one that would probably have been better if it wasn't a Predator movie. It just said, like, oh, here's some alien bounty hunters up to some high drinks.
Yeah, that would have been more interesting because us as the audience wouldn't have known exactly what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't notice, I know the Kathoga is based off of the original Predator, but I didn't even realize how much the Super Predators were in turn based off of the Kathoga.
What do you mean?
Like, oh, the face, it is like, all right, the Kathoga face, that looks a lot like the original Predator, sure, but then the Super Predators look almost exactly like the Kathoga face.
The Kathoga face of what?
Of a relic.
Okay. No, wait, what? You lost me.
Okay, the monster and the relic.
Yeah.
Its face was designed to look somewhat like the Predator.
Okay, I gotcha.
Okay, and the Super Predators, to look more badass, they give them the bigger mandibles, which makes them look more like the Kathoga at this point.
I gotcha. No. I thought you meant whatever that H.P. Lovecraft character's name is called.
Yes. Yeah, but no, that guy's a fireball, I believe.
Sorry, I only know...
A giant living fireball.
Yeah, I was like, this doesn't look like a fireball at all.
No, no. But yeah, I mean, this is fine. I think it would be better if it was like Predators, and I like to think of the comedy of errors that would be of the owners of this game park, like, trying to talk to the Predators' family, as they're like, ooh, we're sorry, we normally send them there just to kill these guys, but it turns out they all got murdered. Ooh, our bad.
Well, the Predators know what they're signing up for.
I would hope so. Just like, oh, well, that happens.
Yeah, so, and this also kind of removes itself even from the, I wouldn't even call this, it's not a science fiction horror movie. It's just an action movie.
Yeah.
Which is a demerit, because the Predator still had a kind of horror movie slasher aspect to it, especially the first one. A lot of the first one is a Predator hunting an individual down, and then the kill execution scene is pretty similar to what you find in a slasher movie.
Yeah.
But you don't get any of that here.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose they could have thrown in some other aliens as well, just as like, oh, the Predators are hunting humans, and the bug-looking guy that was the original Predator, and maybe some aliens from Aliens as well, if they really want to throw that in. So you could get kind of like the, oh, hey, we go and hide in the spaceship with Lawrence Fishburne. Oh, but it turns out this other alien race is using this as, like, their hive.
Yeah, but then people would probably be like, what the fuck, man? It's a Predators film. There's got to be more Predators in it.
Four's a lot of Predators. That's the most in any Predator film.
What about The Predator?
I think The Predator has two Predators.
What about the end of Predator 2, where there's a bunch of fucking Predators coming
I thought that was just three Predators at that point.
Including that old man Predator.
Oh.
Who ain't hurt nobody.
I love that movie. Old Man Predator.
Yeah, so one other little thing that's kind of annoys me, like that ending scene of Predator 2 where you see the fucking alien xenomorph head and that created the whole spinoff. So in that same cabinet, there's also the heads that look sort of like the dog creatures in this. And then in the Prey, supposedly there's, they give the pistol, that's the same pistol that's in the, it's like, how did this one fucking cabinet have all the goddamn Predator lores and all the fucking movies contained within it? It's like thousands of years of history in this fucking one little cabinet. Come on.
No, no, that's a different competing gaming company. So that's like the rich old guys who have their wood-based libraries with the fireplace and all the animal trophy heads they had around. Imagine one of those flying around in a spaceship. That was Predator 2.
So I finally did see this movie. I've wanted to see it for years and years. I would say I was... I was not disappointed because I thought it was supposed to be terrible. Mm-hmm. And then like while I was watching, I was like, you know, this isn't bad until like it gets boring at the ending. Mm-hmm. But it's not a bad movie. It's like a perfectly serviceable action movie.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's a very good version of what it is. It's just not great.
I mean, I don't know if I'd say so far it's a very good version of what it is, but it's like a perfectly, like I could, you know, if I'm strolling through TNT and this movie came on about 20 minutes in and I was doing some other chores, I'd keep it on in the background while I'm searching on my phone.
You'd watch it until Lawrence Fishburne showed up.
And nowadays, that's the highest praise you can give a movie, isn't it?
That you somewhat pay attention to it while on your phone.
There you go. So I'm glad I saw. I'm glad I finally got it off the list.
Mm-hmm. Well, next week there's a better Predator movie to watch.
Don't spoil it.
I won't. I'm just saying it's better.
We'll see about that, Derek.
No, I can strongly think that you will agree with that as well.
I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know.
Well, find out next week with JR, whether he likes it or not.
Adios.
Adios.